Hello, everyone. Welcome to a long-delayed installment of Barely Living the Dream. This is Mel House. It's just going to be me by myself today, sitting in my backyard on a wonderful Sunday evening. Haha, just kidding. That was actually the intro from the last episode, and it has been so long, once again, since we recorded an episode that I was able to just sort of cut and paste that one and use it. But I'm recording this on, it is actually Super Bowl Sunday, 2024, but I don't go for that stuff really. So I'm going to do this and prep this episode while everybody else is getting into that, because it's nice and chill. But you may hear some, our neighborhood usually goes pretty hard for that stuff, so you may hear some music or parties, or the people in the next block over have a huge sports in the garage watching setup, so I can hear it over here a lot of the times. Anyway, there's also 10 cats, that's 10 cats, in our house right now. You may hear them meowing. That is a long story for another podcast. But yeah, so if you hear any of that in the background, that's going on. I'll keep this short and sweet. So yeah, lots has happened since the last episode. Of course, I'm just terrible about keeping up on this. And also, Chris and Brittany have been working quite a bit. If I don't get on myself to like record something solo, then, you know, nothing happens. But there hasn't been, you know, we've been in post on in-betweening, continued post on in-betweening. I have finished, not myself, but our sound designer, in conjunction with the actors that I have only helped coordinate, have pretty much finished all of the ADR. I've got one more person to record, but I'm going to do that on the way up to Greg's to do the final mix. So that is pending. And then, we've got to do final mix. Oops, my makeshift mic setup just fell over because I'm trying not to pull all the other stuff out. Anyway, and just waiting on final animation, and a couple more like just minor pieces, but and then we'll be good to go. So that's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to start, you know, submitting to festivals and setting up a premiere in the probably, I would guess, summer 2024. Based on submission deadlines and when festivals are, that's what it's looking like it will be. So keep an eye out for that. I will try to record more. Again, it's like, I don't know why I didn't, I guess, document more of the process during COVID when everybody else was recording podcasts, but I just wasn't feeling it, man. I just, you know, didn't have, it's not that I didn't have stuff to talk about, but I guess I just didn't feel like talking about it, or I don't know, who knows. But, you know, Mystery Spot came out. We shot in-betweening. Now we're posting in-betweening. Now you're caught up. Chris and Brittany have been working on a ton of stuff. When they're back on again, I'm sure they will talk about it. Last night, actually, Brittany got married to Brandon, who is listeners main. I think he was on an episode a while ago. If not, he will be on one soon because, well, I'll get to that in a second. But he was in Imago, and he's known Chris for a long time. Chris was in the wedding, so I saw both of them last night. So at some point, we'll have to get them back and have them catch everyone up on what they've been doing. They've been working, like I said, consistently pretty much. This episode that we're about to play, it's actually what's happening is I've been going through and just digging through my files and realizing that I have a lot of stuff that we've never put up or put out or isn't available. And we have a behind the scenes interview that we did for Imago once it became In the Blood and we sold it that we included as added value, and it just never saw the light of day. So I put that up on YouTube, and I will be doing more of that kind of thing. I'm kind of reactivating my YouTube channel. Never got deactivated, but I just was bad about I'm as bad about putting stuff on there as I am recording podcasts. So I'm going to try to be disciplined about it and put more stuff up, because I realize that I need to be putting more of this out there and documenting more of it. And there's just so much that we're setting on that, like, I guess would kind of fill in other pieces of the puzzle, or just might be interesting, because that's the kind of stuff I find myself watching on YouTube, is like behind the scenes and making ofs and, you know, that kind of thing. So I figure somebody might be into it. So what this episode is the audio from that interview that we did with Derek Fury, a local guy that I know through jiu-jitsu. He's a jiu-jitsu instructor, but he's also directed a movie which is called Lion Killer, Lion like an animal, Lion Killer, and is available on most streaming platforms. And I suggest you go watch it. It's pretty good. But he did an interview with myself and Chris where we talked about sort of the journey from Imago becoming In the Blood and like what all happened, why it took so long, why we had a movie and then went back and then redid the movie and that kind of thing. And I thought it was a pretty cool interview. So I just wanted to go ahead and put it out there. So, that will be the, you know, what I'll tee up here in a second. And when I reference Brandon being on something, I just thought about this, but we also have a full length commentary that we did for the film with, I think, myself, Brandon, Brittany, Chris, I think Melanie was on it too. We recorded it right as we were getting all the deliverables ready and never saw the light of day also. So, that I think that would be fun to put up because you can, anybody that has watched Dark Ritual or downloaded it or whatever, because the movie's called Dark Ritual now. Anybody that has can kind of like cue it up or they'll watch it and they can listen to this and have more context. But also if, you know, if I put the commentary up, they can kind of cue it up and, you know, kind of watch alongside again, maybe filling in some blanks because that's a movie that's got a lot of stories in how we got to the final product and then got to another version of the final product. Anyway, so hopefully that's us forthcoming and then sort of peppered within there. Hopefully we'll be able to coordinate our schedules and record an all new episode. Again, I'm going to try to be better about this stuff, but I just, you know, I have to be in the mood to do it. I have to, and it's not even anything negative. It's just maybe just focus. I've gotten better about taking more me time, I guess, lately, in the last couple of years. And sometimes that just involves me just sitting in my office, chilling out. I guess that's my meditative state and not really doing anything. So that can be partially to blame, but, hopefully we'll have, more stuff too. We'll, you know, I'll get myself motivated and we'll get more stuff out there. At any rate, I'll go ahead and cue up the interview done with myself and Chris Warren, interviewed by Derek Fury. And this is us just discussing In the Blood and how it became In the Blood from what was formerly Imago. And now all of that, remember, that movie is now called Dark Ritual. It is also available on most streaming platforms. You can find it under that title. Don't be discouraged by an IMDb search if it says it's two different movies. There were some issues where they wouldn't combine the pages or whatever. It's the same thing. It just kind of took a different form. And this interview will explain a lot of that. So without further ado, here we go.
Hello, I'm Derek Fury, writer-director of the feature film Lion Killer. And today I'm here to talk about In the Blood. I'm joined today with the producer, Mr. Mel House, and the director, Mr. Chris Warren. To hop in here, guys, I say you're the producer, you're the director. I made a feature film. You guys did more than that, I'm sure. So before we get do the deep dive I want to do into the making of the film and everything you guys went through, just give a quick shout out to all the credits you guys actually had on this film.
Oh, God. All right. So director, obviously, writer, producer, and a lot of...
Co-writer.
I built all the sets, so we did all that.
Crafty, anybody do crafty?
No, we actually had somebody handling that.
We did. Well, it was me like ordering like burritos and stuff.
But, and then Melanie in the same way
sometimes. Yeah, Melanie did it a lot. Yeah, my wife, also in the movie.
Yeah.
And
then I think that's really about it. I mean, we had somebody handling pretty much everything else, if I remember right.
Right. So producer, co-writer, crafty sometimes, visual effects supervisor towards the end.
Yeah.
Both edited.
Co-edited.
I did a little bit of sound design just to fill holes when we started re-editing. I think that pretty much covers it, though. We actually did have a crew for a lot of the other stuff. that we were used to mostly doing ourselves in the past, but right. we were trying to not take so much on. But the building the sets really was the worst for you.
You were banging the hammers yourself?
Oh, yeah.
I was literally, so there were nights that we would wrap, we'd do a 12-hour day, we'd wrap, I'd literally go back to the warehouse we were shooting the sets at, and we had to flip a set, so I literally have to flip the entire set overnight, get maybe 2 hours of sleep, get back up, and go right back into directing.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say the set, this was in the house it was shot, or you had a separate set?
So, the bedroom that you, Brian's bedroom that you see, that's all built on a set. All the bathroom scenes you're seeing are all set, and I think that's it.
We didn't they're like extensions for the house, because I had a warehouse at the time that we were able to build. We knew that we wanted to destroy a lot of it, so we wanted to build stuff to match. And to be honest, the house that we lived in, which is the house...
That's what I was about to say. You lived in the house.
House. Yeah. We also... It just wasn't... It's not a huge place inside, so we didn't have a whole lot of room to move around. So we wanted to... You know, the bedroom is oversized a little bit. The bathrooms are a little bit oversized. So, yeah, we built it in the warehouse I had, which was right on I-10 in Washington, right behind the Denny's, for those of you that know Houston.
H-Town.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we didn't realize how much of a soundstage it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because it was so loud, the freeway noise and everything. So
yeah, it was right by the highway. And
well, we'll get into like all the super technical stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
First, take me back, each one of you. Chris, go first. What made you want to be a filmmaker? And I say that almost sinister, with a sinister tone. Like, you thought this would be a good idea, right?
Yeah. So... I grew up in the theater. That was kind of how it all started for me in the arts, at least. A lot of my family is in the arts, musicians, all that stuff. Literally, since I was able to walk, I was in a theater. And then grew up just kind of going through the motions, then got into theater, went into college into theater. And then some of that, like, obviously I always had a love for film. And I love the idea of filmmaking.
Do you remember what sparked, like, is there a film you saw that...
Oh, man.
Citizen Kane, right? That's everybody.
Yeah. No, actually, believe it or not, it's like The Crow. I mean, that kind of movie really kind of, like, piqued my interest. Like, oh, my God, how did they do that? That kind of thing.
Well, that's
like,
kind of interesting, because I think today's generation, like, so much has been done with film, but when The Crow came out, it was like this amazing thing.
Right.
Yeah. Plus it had Bruce Lee's son in it. It was, you know, it was you went to the movie theater and you watched this thing that was dark and brooding and ominous with this magnanimous personality who's the son of the most magnanimous personality of all time. So I can totally see how that film would just like...
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it caught my eye. And I mean, obviously, like, when my mom wasn't a terrible mother, but she showed me a lot of horror films when I was little. So I kind of got into that, and like one of the first horror films that ever scared me, ever freaked me out, was Nightmare 3, Dream Warrior. So specifically the ventriloquist part, like that totally freaked me out, but also had me so intrigued, like how did they do that? How is that? That's scaring the hell out of me, but how did they do it, you know? So it was stuff like that that just really kind of piqued my interest. I just, growing up, I never had the funds to get a camera to start shooting. So it was one of those situations where I was like, I was always into it. I just never had the opportunity. But then, you know, going through college, they had a film program that I was starting to get into. And then Mel came actually and spoke at one of our things. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I remember doing it.
Yeah.
What schools do you want to give a shout out?
Well, San Jacinto College Central was where I went for most of the film school stuff. And then Mel, on top of several other people, all talked to me like, dude, you just need to get in the business. Stop. If you really want to do this, stop going to school, get in the business, and just take your licks and learn your lessons.
He came to your school and said, drop out.
Well, he didn't that day, but yeah, later on, it was just like...
It's like, say, man, call me later. Okay.
Yeah. It was just one of those, you know...
Take this tuition money.
Exactly.
I've got a movie. Yeah. So, my girlfriend's the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of those situations where... Then I went on to Walking Distance, which is Psychic Experiment now, through Lionsgate. And then just kind of started working my way up. And that's how it all happened. So,
and the rest is history, as they
say. Yep.
And you, Mel, what first got you interested in filmmaking. And we've talked about this a little bit more for people who might not find this interesting. I know Mel through jiu-jitsu, through Brazilian jiu-jitsu, here in Houston, Sugarland area. Mm-hmm. So we're filmmaking brothers, but also bound together by the by the art of bending limbs the wrong way.
Yeah. But there's a metaphor in there for movies, definitely, for sure, somewhere.
Getting choked out, definitely. Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
So tell me what really sparked your interest and led you down this path.
Sure. I mean, really, it very clearly was when I saw the first Nightmare on Elm Street. I think I saw it at the theater when I was, I was 8 years old, so I was way too young to be seeing that movie. But the moment where I knew it was all make-believe and, you know, kayfabe, but the moment where Glenn gets sucked in the bed, Johnny Depp, and all the blood, just the fountain comes out, I was like, okay, I want to make that kind of stuff happen. I know it's like a magic trick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so down with doing that kind of thing. And so that's pretty much, I'd always had a love for it, like going through school whenever I would have to do, and you know, I'm 44, so when I was in school, the consumer devices for making your own videos were like big VHS cameras, and not everybody had them. They were still expensive, right? But I had a friend that I went to school with, and we would always pair together on projects. And instead of trying to write a report, we would always try to get the teacher to let us do a little movie. And so editing in VCR, you know, VCRs, camera, you know, VCR to VCR.
I did the same thing.
Yeah, so we started doing that. And then when I went to college at UT, Austin, I actually started, my major was aerospace engineering with a minor in film. But about halfway through that first year, I knew it was like the film classes I was plugging into. You know, it's like we're talking about Battleship Potemkin and the Odessa Steppe sequence and their Untouchables and how they match, you know. And so I'm like, this is what's stimulating me. Like, this is what I want to do. And plus, I'm in Austin at that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was right when, right before everything was blowing up with Robert Rodriguez and all that. So the bug really bit me then, and I switched my major and kind of never looked back. So, and then just started, I started working on movies there because everybody there everybody in the film community there was doing the same thing. So I would look for ads in this magazine called Indie Slate and they'd be hiring crews. So I just boom opted on something for free basically. And that was my first movie set. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm into this. It was Mark David's movie. Yep. Sweet thing. Yeah. And that's kind of, and I just started working on sets and then eventually I started working at the public access station here in Houston when I moved back. And that gave me access to cameras. That was right after.
I remember that was the big thing. Go volunteer or work.
Exactly.
And you could take their equipment out and go shoot.
Right. And I was actually waiting tables at the Olive Garden. And some guy asked me, another guy I was working with, he's like, oh, so you want to do movies? You should go to the public access station. Because I went there. They just let you have cameras.
They did. They did. Now, this was the 90s you're talking about.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It was pre like 24p shooting on, you know, cameras. But you could still get like a 3/4 inch or like a SVHS camera and run around and shoot something. Sure, it looked like it was shot on video, but you could start getting the basics and figuring out editing and all that. Mm-hmm. And what I would do was I did a couple of projects with my band at the time. I shot a couple of things on 16mm videos, music videos for our band, and I would get them transferred to Betatape and then edit them at Access. Kind of like what Robert Rodriguez
did. That's what he did with El Mariachi. He converted it.
Yeah, because that's where I got the idea. I was like, I could do this, and I could work here for free.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I really started doing the work. And then as the years progressed, you know, then we start seeing the DVX come out. That was right when the GL2 kit came out, and the whole shift to digital video was happening. So that's pretty much what enabled me to do my first feature, because I just took the camera, because we got all those GL2s, and I just checked out three of those, and we shot my first feature, and that's kind of where it started.
And so take me down the rabbit hole of In the Blood, also known as
Imago.
Yep.
With an I, because I always think it's like Imago with an A, but it's Imago. And so take me down the rabbit hole all the way. How did this thing get conceptualized? How did you guys team up? And give me the story.
So the team up kind of happened basically through Psychic. Like when I got on with him on that, I was a PA basically,
and just it was not long after I came and spoke at the school, and I was like, "Hey, I'm about to shoot a movie. Can I help?"
Yeah, and so I just like showed up every day, worked my ass off, and like I guess impressed him. I don't know, you know. And so the next
by
thing
by the
you
way,
know,
when I was in film school, guys would come and all they would offer it was internships that they would never respond to when I said
right.
So just getting anyone who's like actually giving you attention to help you out to boom up is a very big deal for anybody
totally
interested in getting into filmmaking. But go ahead.
So anyway, yeah, we did that and then just kind of worked my way up. And the next thing you know, like we were working on a couple things here or there, and it was actually right when you had moved into the new warehouse.
Yeah.
Or the office basically and warehouse. And we were just sitting there chatting one day and he just kind of goes, he kind of leaned back and was like, "Hey, what do you think about directing your first movie?" And I was like, "Okay, I'll take a stab." And so he's like, "You've got 3 weeks to write it, and then we'll start working on everything." And I was like, "Sweet." So went home, kind of came up with the idea. I mean,
and what was that process like? Because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with the film.
Yeah, it's so if you can't, probably you've watched the movie by this point, and now you're watching.
If not, spoiler alert!
A lot.
Go watch it now.
So I'm into mind fuckery a lot. I like to twist your mind. I like mind bending stuff. So that kind of was in my head. I was listening to The Fountain a lot, the score of The Fountain, just while I was writing, because it was just kind of helping me and getting that headspace. Anyway, and then while I was writing, it just kind of flew out of my head. Like, I don't know, we came up with this whole Mayan God idea. I think I texted you about that, and I was like, "Hey, what do you think about a Mayan God?" Like, because we were already past, what was that, Y2K or whatever and all that, but we were coming up on that time where, like, the Mayan calendar would have fallen apart or whatever.
It was right when people started talking about the fact.
It was in the ethos, the whole
Mayan. So I came up with this Mayan God, and then I was like, well, what about... Okay, so I wanted it to be a female lead, like I knew that, and so like we were writing that, and then it just kind of flew out of my head. It's been so long. I mean, to be honest, we're doing this, what, now 10 years, 11?
12.
Almost 12 years, past.
From that, yeah.
So it's all kind of a blur, but I mean, I remember like specific things, like I remember getting into the scene with the baseball glove, and I was... just sitting there, I was like, man, what the hell? What would be creepy and weird? That's a going thing, by the way. Creepy and weird is something I say a lot, especially about this movie.
It'll be a drinking game during this.
Exactly.
So, the creepy and weird drinking game.
So we go into the whole, like, I go into this, like, well, we had them already throwing the baseball, right? And so we're like, okay, well, what about, like, if it's this flesh-made baseball glove, you know? And like, the baseball is literally made out of meat, you know? And so it just... I started writing all that down. And then really, like, once we got through all that to the end, at the end is where I kind of locked up. My brain just kind of went, okay, how do I end this? How do I finish this? And so I actually had to go to Mel and was like, hey, and he was obviously reading stuff as I was writing it because I was sending it to him and being like, what do you think? And then we got to the end and he was like, I've got an idea, hold on. And so like within like 3 or 4 hours, we kind of had the ending, and like I was like, oh, I love that. And then I kind of like put my piece in, and he was like, oh yeah, let's do this. And that's kind of how the script came together. But yeah, that was the lovely process of writing that script.
So you weren't like you weren't into the history of the Mayan Inca and all that stuff beforehand, or?
Oh, I mean, so don't get me wrong, like growing up, I read into mythology and like all that stuff. And so, like, that was part of what steered me that way was I was thinking about mythology and, like, okay, Greek mythos. Okay, what about Roman? No, that doesn't work. And so then I started looking into Mayan mythology and, like, what they believed in and, like, how their beliefs and, like, they actually... Pakwe is not an actual Mayan deity by any means. It's just... I was like, well, what if we took the idea of flesh eater, because that's what it means, and we make that its own Mayan deity and what it can do. And kind of as through reading a lot of the mythology and like what they believed and stuff like that, I was like, well, we can take this piece here, kind of make it all work in underneath this deity that we're creating. So, and that's kind of how it all came together.
Now, so you've got the script,
mm-hmm.
you got your Is it just the two of you at this time, or you go about getting a crew together? What's the process of actually going into production?
Right now, yeah, at that point, it was just the two of us. And then, but we had worked with, like...
Did you have the money already, or?
Yes.
Should I mention the price tag on this film, the budget on this film?
You can, yeah, it's
the
fine.
The TTNL?
Yeah, the TTNL. Well, and also, like, before you do that, I guess the piece that, not that Chris is leaving out, but he didn't really know about this at the time, but the reason that I had that moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to make a movie, is that my wife and I had tried to purchase a house, but because of several issues, we kind of got denied at the last minute. It was really a pulling the rug out from under us kind of thing. So I got so frustrated that I was like, I'm going to take this money and I'm going to make a movie. But at the time...
Sound investment.
Exactly.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
We'll see if 12 years later, gives a return. But at the time, I was deep in post-production and delivery of Psychic Experiment. Because when we signed, I did Walking Distance, Lionsgate bought the rights to it, but the process of actually delivering the movie took about a year and a half. And after it had taken that long, for those that don't know, Katie Featherston is in that movie. They knew that Paranormal Activity 3 was coming out, so they wanted to wait until that one came out to really release it. So it's kind of just, everything was just taking a long time. But it was taking up a lot of my time because a lot of stuff I had to do. So I wanted to do another movie, but I knew that there'd be no way that I could direct it. That's what I was like, let's give Chris a chance. So that's when I was like, Mr. Warren, would you be interested in directing a movie? Yeah. So that's kind of where that came from. And then at that time, like once it really started to gel and we knew it was going to be a thing, that's when I pretty much had called in, started reaching out to the people that had worked with us on Psychic Experiment, because it is essentially that crew that came in. Our AD probably was the first one to jump on.
Yeah, Aaron
Brooke. And she would, because I worked closely with her for several years around this time, and she was great at breaking stuff down and getting, helping us get our heads around, okay, how long is this really going to take? How much is this really going to cost me? You know what I mean? Like really looking at it that way. She came in pretty early on, and then Zach Humphreys, who's our DP, I think came on next. Mm-hmm. He was the assistant camera on Psychic Experiment. And so he came in to, this was his opportunity to DP a movie on his own.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah, very much so. And the effects, practical effects people, same guy, Marcus. Mm-hmm. So yeah, everybody kind of, we pretty much called the team back together.
Yeah, and that's an important detail with indie film is working on other people's films, then working on your films, building a relationship.
Right,
absolutely.
It's really hard to get anything done without those kind of relationships, unless you've got a bunch of money.
Right.
When you can throw money at the problem, it's easier sometimes. Yeah.
But I wouldn't call this a micro budget, but it's a lower budget indie. Mm-hmm. What were some of the obstacles you guys had moving into production?
Obstacles. I mean, so
what stands out? What's like, oh, I can't believe.
Well, effects were definitely a thing. Like, don't get me wrong, Marcus did his best with what he had, but like, there was just a lot of things that we wanted to go big. You know what I mean? Like, we wanted this creature to have a mouth that could open up and spew somebody out. You know, and stuff like that. Like, it was just like, there was no way to make that happen in the budget that we had. Like, we couldn't do automated things, you know? So that was one of the biggest things.
Yeah. And I think it complicated because we had conversations with those guys where they were like, oh yeah, we can pull this off.
Yeah.
But then like, after we'd committed to it, it was kind of like, well, actually, I'm like, well, we've already kind of thought about, cause remember when the creature was going to have like a cape of people.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Then we were like, fuck yeah, that's going to be awesome. And like literally Marcus was like, no, that's easy. We can totally do that. I was like, okay, cool. And then came time and what we got was a hula hoop latex thing that didn't really ever match up to what we wanted. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And not to throw him under the bus, like a lot of things were going on to where it's like the stuff wasn't set in.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was having issues with the materials that he hadn't really, for whatever reason, we hadn't had that much problem on Psychic Experiment. Also, he had a good team of people with him where we couldn't afford to bring them all out.
Time. He was kind of doing it all by himself.
So it was kind of like we were having to deal with it on the fly.
Yeah.
And kind of roll with
it. Well, you guys also had a mix of like practical effects and digital CGI created, however you want to say it, but practical and computer generated effects.
Right.
Did the same person do the digital effects or?
No. So we actually went through three rounds of visual effects. So the first round, once again, not throwing these guys under the bus, they did an amazing job for the budget they were given. And I think they had even said, like, we don't normally do this, but we'll take a stab, right?
Right. And that's pretty bad. At the time, we didn't really have connections in that world. So it was kind of like, well, a stab is all we can do now.
And all this is happening in Houston, not in Los Angeles or New York.
Right. These guys, I think one was in Dallas and one might have been in L.A. But, yeah, they definitely weren't, like, part of that larger filmmaking infrastructure.
Right.
So it was pretty much who we could get, friend of a friend, you know, kind of thing. And I think initially we hadn't even intended
to do that many visual effects,
maybe like one or two, like for the Mayan stuff.
And the Brandon, like the wall gags, we knew were going to have to be. But that was
then
it.
Things like were becoming visual effects that we hadn't intended because of the complications we had just mentioned about the practical effects. So those guys took a stab at it and it worked.
Yeah.
And we could put it together. Well, our first guy, because this is the second group we're talking about.
Yeah.
The first guy that we hired, we'll throw him under the bus because he never showed up.
He fucking bailed on us like a douchebag.
Yeah. He just never showed up. So it's kind of like that's another reason why the shots we were doing became difficult because there's no VFX soup on set.
Yeah.
This dude no-showed. We're already shooting. So it's like we kind of have to, okay, I saw this behind the scenes where they shot it kind of this way.
Yeah, this is
we don't have a big green screen room, but let's try to make it work.
Lock the camera off and hope and pray with a plate and the actor in front of the camera that they can make it work.
So I'm like watching all the Lord of the Rings stuff. I'm like, how do I do this? How do I do this? You know, and again, like you kind of have to, a lot of that stuff to pull it off right, not only do you have to get your head around it, but you kind of need those resources. So we're giving them footage that really, you know, there's not a lot they can do with. They can, you know, they're only doing their best. And so, it came in and it was workable. So we did the first cut of the movie around that.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what Imago was.
Yeah, that was Imago, which hopefully that will be on
the we're trying to include Imago as a feature
as
on
a bonus.
DVD. We'll see if it, but we're trying to include it because I think it'd be interesting to watch to AB them.
Yeah.
So we actually finished that and screened that one.
Yeah. And it did well.
And then we got a rep who offered to try to sell it for us. And the feedback that we kept getting was, love the movie, but the effects, it's just not working. It's like they're not willing to give us a good price for it. Yeah. We got an offer from a TV channel that wanted to buy it as part of a package, but it was kind of like chump change. When I say that, I mean, it really was a very low amount that we probably would have never seen. So in the process of doing all that, because this is taking years, you know, because those guys that were doing the effects for us at the time, this was not their main gig. Like they were working on interstitials for the Super Bowl and stuff.
Yeah, they were doing.
So it's like they would have to put that stuff first, so it would just take a long time. In the process of doing that, Chris and I are working on a bunch of other movies, so we're meeting people that could eventually get us to a VFX supervisor that could help us out, and that's what happened.
What happened? Yeah, and so we ended up going with, was it Skulltree?
Yeah,
Skulltree. Jason Miller. Jason Miller.
Not Jason Miller from The Exorcist.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously. He's no longer with us.
And, you know, we showed Jason what we had, and he was like, okay. And because we had both really done a bang-up job for him on a couple of movies, he was like, look, I'm going to hook you guys up. Like, I don't want, you know, I get it. You guys don't have a whole lot of money. And that was actually something we had to go back and get money for, because even not a whole lot of money was still a lot of money for us.
Right.
And because I think it was almost like 15 grand.
Right.
Yeah. So we had to go back and get all that. And then, you know, in between, like basically he was like, it's a bro deal. So understand, like if I have to take a bigger gig, I have to work on that. We totally understood. And it just took time.
Yeah.
You know,
so it was the same kind of situation.
Yeah.
But then, like, he would send us shots, and we're like, okay, these are game changers. It's worth the wait.
Yeah.
But then it would make us, we're like, but can we finish it? Can we finish it? You know, it looks so good.
I mean, it's like the first time we got the creature render, just the rendering. It wasn't even, like, it was just a 3D rendering you could spin around and look at.
Yeah.
And we both were just like, holy crap. Like, it's everything we thought of and more. You know, like, they just really brought the creature to life instead of it being – two-dimensional like it was in Imago, you know? So it's really, it's awesome that they, and they took the time like to create the light effects and like it glistens in the right way when it moves. Like it was just awesome to see all that, you know?
Yeah.
Truly like a bigger budget movie, you know, and seeing like a monster created that way, or like in Pacific Rim when they create the robots or whatever you want to look at, you know? So that was one of the biggest obstacles that we went through, was the VFX, special effects, into all that. Like, then on top of it, there were shots that we just never ended up getting, which not a fault to him. We totally understand what happened, but whatever. Anyway, so we actually had to end up going back, and I mean, we could start talking. We had to go back and reshoot stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, we actually ended up using a newer, you know, 4K camera whenever we shot the movie. It was shot in 720 because that was the big deal, 720 and 1080.
Yeah, yeah. Technology is changing underneath us as we're working on this.
So we go back and reshoot.
Because we initially edited on Final Cut.
Yeah, so it was on Final Cut Pro.
So I had to move everything over,
Then they came with Final Cut X, and we both were like, nah.
So we moved it all to Premiere, and then I had to rebuild it. But anyway, go ahead.
It was nuts. And so,
we reshot.
We had to go back and reshoot stuff just to fill in gaps of VFX that we didn't end up getting back, you know. But then there was also like, creatively, we just started looking at it and like, we don't really need that. Let's just cut to this practically and cut to that. And then boom, we're done. We're out of it, you know? So the whole time it was a creative process for both of us of like, okay, how do we fix this? How do we fix that? Like, okay, this sequence works, but it needs to be more, it needs to be faster. The pace needs to be faster. So like, we would have to cut things out and then put them in other places. It was just all around, the way the script was written to what is now is totally a different animal. And I wish we could I wish that was a special feature. Like we could just
give you the script
so you can actually read the script
put up little pieces,
you know, and see what it actually originally was to what it has become now, because it's a totally different beast.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I want to get into, because you guys do something interesting. The movie has had two different names that followed the edit change, I assume, right?
Correct.
So you guys have an initial edit or initial cut of the film, Imago.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. A new cut, new VFX, and it is now called In the Blood. Mm-hmm. When I hear you guys talk about it, it's like you're talking about two different movies.
Oh, yeah.
When we did Imago, but In the Blood.
I mean, it is.
It does feel that way in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean.
And that's what, that started to really drive some creative decisions, because once we did that, and shot the new footage, especially like the things we shot with Sadie, I was like, this is a different thing. We need to maybe do a new, like do other things differently, like new sound design, new score. Of course, sound design.
Yeah.
We knew that we were going to take another pass, but like drastically change some things. Because I think the second time around is when Greg added the applause and all that shit.
And you had a orchestra or a
Four-piece symphony. String quartet.
Yep.
On an indie film, everyone.
Yeah.
And they're great. Two-star symphony.
They're amazing.
Located in Houston.
They're amazing.
Reach out to them. They're amazing.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we've worked together a few times. And I knew the more we got into this, and Two-Star had been asking me, like, please, can we score anything else for you? Please, can we score anything else for you? And the opportunity just had, I've sent them to other people, like on other movies we worked on.
Yeah.
That I thought they would work for, but they just never bit. But once we got to this point, again, no slight on what Dwayne did, but it became a different movie.
Yeah.
And so we're like, man, maybe we need to see if they're interested in rescoring this thing and see where we get from that. And then once we started laying that stuff in, is really I'm like, oh man, we're looking at, this is an entirely different thing. So,
and I mean, Greg is so awesome that
Greg is our sound designer, Greg Vosburg.
Yeah. He's so awesome that he literally took, when we say no slight to Dwayne, we mean it literally, he literally took stuff that Dwayne had scored for us and then mixed it in with Two Star. So it he melded two things together. And there was times I was like, there's no way that's going to work. He's like, And he just kept going. And I was like, holy crap, that really works. It was amazing. And it just brought a whole new animal beast, as I always call it. Cause it's what this whole process has been, just a beast.
How long was it from Imago to In the Blood? What's the timeline between those two?
10 years. 10 years, right?
Well, when did we screen at Buffalo? Buffalo was what, 2000? It was 2012?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Then In the Blood, we started posting that about 2 years ago. Like the final process.
Right, which if we're saying 12, so it would have been...
19.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, so yeah.
7 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you also mentioned working with Sadie. You got to work with her twice.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
When she was wee, and yeah. Now she's grown.
Yeah.
It was... It was crazy. I mean, literally, I remember working with her as a little kid, you know, and same thing as Mason. They both were little, you know.
Because they're the kid versions of the main characters, right? They're
the main characters, you know. And so it was awesome. And I wish, like, looking back and, you know, now that we, this crazy thing happened and then she was grown, now we're shooting her as an adult. I wish there would have been a way, like, I remember telling you about it, I wish there would have been a way to throw Mason into that, like, because now that he's grown, but it just didn't fit. Like, there was no way to fit that in. Yeah, exactly. So, but, like, Sadie just came in and she killed it, you know? She killed it as a little kid. Like, we knew she was going to knock it out of the park, and she did. You know, I mean, Natalie, in a lot, so just so everybody knows what we're talking about, in the flashback sequences that you see, Natalie is obviously 7-8 years older at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And her hair was different. So she literally had to go get extensions. Like there was a whole, it was a whole process to getting us to shooting this, you know?
And, it goes back to the VFX stuff because the whole reason that we thought about doing this in the first place and then we started going down that path was even though Jason was hooking us up, there were certain things that either were just shot entirely incorrectly or that we could not get to work.
Yeah.
So we had holes in the movie that were like, how do we fill these? You know, or maybe are there pieces of the narrative that we need to fill in and maybe tell a little more story? So I started thinking about it. I was like, what can we do? And then I think Sadie had put up a picture of herself on Facebook or whatever. And I'm like, I immediately thought Boyhood. And I was like, how can we squander this opportunity? Yeah. Like, who can, like, let's take our weakness and turn it into a strength, right? Like, who gets this chance? So I emailed her first and I was like, hey, would you be down to do this? And she's like, I mean, immediately, all about it, right? So then we started working backwards from there. Like, okay, how do we make this work? What can it be? And then that's kind of what led us to what we have.
Yeah, which is, you know, super awesome. Like,
we just shot in one day in my living room at the old condo. Yeah.
And I literally took styrofoam and like cut out weird cutouts. Basically, and then we just threw light behind it, you know, and it looks like this weird dream world, you know, and it's funny because you look at like BTS stuff from Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street and all that, and it's like they kind of did the same thing, like, you know, it's like the one of the most infamous pictures I always think about from Dream Warriors is when she's straddling a sawhorse, you know, in the TV Freddy thing, like it's so obvious that you do stuff like that, but you know the audience never sees that. They don't know what that really is.
Yeah.
So it's really cool, like when you start doing that kind of stuff and taking it to a whole other level, and the whole idea of movie magic, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Freddy keeps coming up, Nightmare on Elm Street, and I remember Mel gave me a copy of the movie, probably on thumb drive, and I watched it. And next time I saw you in jiu-jitsu, I was like, hey, who's the Nightmare on Elm Street fan? I think that was the first thing.
Yeah,
I
said. Yeah.
Just because like the way it's lit.
Yeah.
You know, you guys obviously had a haze machine or a smoke machine, probably a haze machine going. In a way, you'd have like light beaming in from tinfoil in the.
Right.
You know, it looked like it was influenced by a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Very much so, yeah.
And I say that lovingly. Like, it's good. Like, I like the fact that you could point out, hey, this is these guys' influence.
For sure.
What these guys are into. Now, you also mentioned your screening in Buffalo. Was take me through that process of screening the film. You've got it in the can now. This was Imago, correct?
This was Imago.
It's two different films, people. Okay? We have Imago. He's going to put special effects right here. Imago and In the Blood.
Yeah.
Sweet poster, by the way.
Thanks. Thank
you. Shout out to Jeff Cottle.
Yeah, dude.
From Game Face.
Killing it.
Yeah, he's I've known him. I've been a fan of his band for years, but his day job is doing movie posters. He's actually done like most of the X-Men movies, Deadpool, Lord of the Rings, all that. But he does them for us. So thank you, Jeff, because we get stuff like that.
Yeah. The negative space with the axe is really
Yeah. He was like, take a picture of the axe for me. I'm like, cool, I'm curious as to what you're gonna do with it.
Right. Yeah.
But and so, then that's actually the house. Like the picture I took of our house looks nowhere that cool.
Yeah.
You know? And then that shot of Sadie up there, that's a screen grab.
Yeah.
Low res, but he makes it work. You know, so good.
It's really cool.
Yeah. So Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember how that came together. I think maybe the programmer of that festival, which is Greg Lamberson, who's another horror or genre director. He's been doing it for a long time. He did Slime City, Slime City Massacre. He just did Widow's Point. I think he reached out and asked.
Yeah, he was
for
like,
us to screen. Yeah, he's like, hey, I know you guys are done. Would you love to? Would you come screen here? And we hadn't really. We had tried. We had honestly tried to submit Imago into a lot of other festivals.
Yeah.
But maybe for the reasons we mentioned, like the effects or whatever, it just was not.
Wasn't sticking.
People weren't into it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And so Greg offered us that opportunity, and we're like, okay, great, because he does it. It's a genre festival. He does it in an old school theater. And I'd never been to Buffalo.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's go do it.
Let's go did you get some wings?
Buffalo wings.
We absolutely did. Yeah. And the, what are they called? The pizza sand, the pizza subs?
Oh, yeah.
They were
big
on that. Those are good.
The Anka buys, they like to call it.
Yeah. And so we went up there. It was cold.
Oh, God.
Super cold. Because it was March. I feel like it was definitely in the winter.
Yeah, it was in the winter.
So yeah, we went up there and screened, and it was we screened in between a lot of good movies. On Air. I can't remember what it's called.
On
now.
Air movie, that German movie that was like, whoa.
But it was the lineup was killer, and the people that were there were just really receptive to everything. Like everybody there stayed to watch everything.
Yeah.
And
even the Q&As, like they would just stay.
Yeah, and they had good questions. Awesome. You could tell they paid attention.
Yeah.
So that was when we were like, oh, okay, cool, man. People are into this. Like we made something good.
Yeah. We made a movie.
We made a movie.
See, look.
I told you.
We're on the marquee.
Yeah.
Literally.
And then it just, nothing happened with it, with our sales rep. There was just that one deal that we got offered and, and then that's when we got the feedback about the VFX. So that's what kind of began the metamorphosis.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember talking to a couple of the guys at Buffalo, and we were all just chatting and talking, and like after they saw the movie, and we were outside and we were just chatting about things, and they were like, "Man, the movie is great." And that was the start of like us thinking about the VFX, was that a lot of people had said that kind of already at Buffalo. But we, at the same time,
what would they say? Oh, we love the movie, but the effects.
Yeah, it was like, we love the movie, but the VFX just kind of pull us out because they're not.
There was always a button. People would try, they'd be nice about it. But you could tell they were like, that was a moment.
It was the sticking point
Now, do you think today, today, I'm saying this in 2021, there's a whole group of people that love movies that are, The Room or things like that. Not to say your movie was like that, but they love the fact that, oh, this movie has bad VFX. You got to watch this movie.
Yeah.
Do you think it would do better now, that version?
No.
I don't think so, because the rest of it is too... Yeah.
Too good?
I don't want to say that.
It's got to be bad all the way.
The whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, you can't have
the whole palette has to kind of be bad.
Because you've got so much...
And I think that's what really bummed people out about it, to be honest, because it's like the performances from Natalie and Lisa and Sean and Omar, I think, are actually really good for an indie movie, for sure. Like really good performances.
It grips you, for sure.
Like, and you can tell people are into it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where there's really a disconnect, because the effects are like, some of them are like, I would say like PlayStation 1 era.
Yeah, it's
like kind of
watching old Resident Evil stuff,
Yeah.
I was going to say like watching old George Reeves Superman and he flies away. It's just a cartoon.
Yeah.
Right.
That was one of the biggest things. Like, people would be so receptive to it and so into it. But then it was almost like the air was sucked out of the room when the VFX started.
That's got to be a horrible feeling, though.
Yeah, it sucked, because you're sitting there going, man, like...
It's hard to get people. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. People don't realize to craft a story that's captivating, captures people, pulls them in, that they move aside reality for a second. And you can lose them like that as well.
Totally. You have them like almost in the palm of your hand. They're eating it up. What I mean? And then... the second the VFX hit, it was just kind of like, well, we're out. And it just sucked, And
it's what I always, we knew.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there watching it, and whenever a VFX...
In three, two, one, there it goes.
I start looking at people.
You just kind of sink a little bit in your chair.
Yeah. Like, you're just like, well, okay.
That was Chris's idea. He signed off.
Yeah, blame me on it,
Did you guys get, I'm with Stupid shirts with the arrow?
Yeah. Both pointing at each other.
This is the VFX supervisor.
Talk
to the VFX supervisor.
And so I mean, it was one of those things that, like, even when we got the deal offered to us, I mean, at that point, it had been 6 years, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like...
It kind of was like water in the desert. Like, we agonized over it a little bit. Yeah,
like, should we just take it and go? Like, and just be... Like, just get it out, you know? And, like...
And that's where most filmmakers land. I mean, independent filmmakers land. As long as people see it...
Right.
Well, but, I mean, you put so much and so much time, you also want to have a value on your time as well.
Right.
Totally. And that's kind of where him and I both came out with it, was like, we could take this deal... And be happy that it's out, but also know that it's not our best product. Or we could say no, fix it, and then know we're fixing it. Know we're just going to take it back to the ground, basically, and build it all the way back up. And that's what we decided to do.
And that's where In the Blood was born.
That's correct. That's when it started.
Yep.
Now, I have on my list here, distro stories. Tales of distribution. You guys kind of, I guess, touched on that right now with your with your rep. Was that as far as it got, or was there
pretty much? Like we had a rep who I actually met through. I was working on another movie that I was trying to get going that nothing happened with. That's a whole nother story that you'll hopefully hear one day.
Barely living the dream, ladies and gentlemen.
yeah, listen to our podcast.
Yeah,
But he was good friends with this distro rep that I sent the Imago trailer to. And that guy was like, yeah, okay, I think I can do something with this. You know, that's kind of the vibe, because they're like, oh, it's genre. Sure, we'll sell it.
Yeah.
You know, they'll figure something out.
Yeah.
They think it's like just a hole-in-one because it's genre.
Yeah.
It'll make money. It's got blood and a monster.
Right. But, he would check in with me often and just, it's like, I got nothing. No bites, you know, and we sent it to the usual suspects. And what's frustrating at the time is that I would see other movies get picked up and I would feel, rightly or wrongly, but, you know, start comparing myself to them. And I'm like, our movie's better than that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And so it would really jack my head up that way.
I don't mean to cut you. I just remember like watching some movie and like the effects were worse than Imago's. And I called you. I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is bullshit, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How did they make money on this and we can't even get a deal? You know what I mean? Like, that was the kind of shit that would go through my head. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
Like, it's shit like that that you're just like, how is that even possible? You know, like, I don't understand, you know? Because, I mean, literally, like, well, you're saying a sci-fi deal, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't even get that, you know? And, like, sci-fi has... vastly jumped up. But at that time, it wasn't. You were still watching, like, what was that? Starship Troopers, like, 4, you know? And then the effects were, like, terribly done on green screen, you know what I mean? So, not that I'm calling out Starship Troopers. There are some good movies, don't get me wrong.
Movies still available for licensing sci-fi, if you're interested. Exactly. Right. Right. Nothing personal.
Yeah, nothing, well, yeah, nothing I'm calling them out.
What I was going to say is, I can relate because I did a movie on jiu-jitsu. And hadn't made much money from it, but currently I think Nicolas Cage's movie Jiu-Jitsu is all the rage. So it's like, I'm just kind of sitting there like, I wonder how many zeros he added to his account.
Right.
You know, I'm actually in the culture. So I think that's common to a lot of filmmakers, especially the struggle of putting all your heart and soul into something for so long. Mm-hmm. Because, like you guys say, at this point, you're probably 12 years into this process. The movie's finally coming out. How does that feel?
Good. Feels like I always compare it to, like, Atlas carrying the world on his shoulders, and now it's gone. And, like, I feel like I can breathe again. Like,
it's the same analogy I use all the time. Like, I'm just pushing the boulder up the mountain.
I mean, because that's really what it was. And, I mean, it was like... As much as the boulder, it's like it started off as a rock and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And like, there were several points where it's like, oh shit, can we actually keep this up? You know what I mean? Because.
And it comes down to YouTube because, I mean, when you're on set, if it's a small indie, there's 10, 12 people. Everybody's pushing. But people start to go to their other gigs.
Right.
But you're left pushing.
Right.
So the fact that you guys are left, at least you have a partner in crime to push that boulder up the mountain. Mel, how does it feel?
Yeah, I mean, it feels great. Like, part of me never thought this day would come in a weird way.
Yeah.
But, you know, but then also part of me always knew it would. Mm. You know, like, there were certain things in the last, you know, year, maybe 2 years, because of course we, right before it was really going to come out, then everything pauses because of coronavirus. That's when we're recording this.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's all solved by now, by the time you're watching this.
Yeah.
Everything's great in the year 2040.
Yeah, exactly.
I welcome you, robot overlords.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, 2 years ago or so, there was a point, it might have been when we started getting the final shots in, and I was like, okay, it's real.
Yeah.
It's real. And then I could just my whole vibe on the whole thing changed. You know, I started to get excited about working on it again, to where it kind of, it felt like a slog or just like something I had to do, like my taxes.
Yeah.
Like, okay, every few months it's time to work on.
Yeah, gotta go drop a new
Imago.
Gotta go drop a new shot.
Drop a new shot in, see if it works, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely, not only has that stuff changed my outlook on it, but then we actually did a benefit screening for it earlier in the, like right around when things started shutting down for COVID, because it was supposed to be in the theater. We're benefiting a friend of ours who had cancer, and it was an opportunity for people to see the new version.
Yeah.
We had to do it virtual, but just the response to it, to people that don't know it, like people I just invited that were in like horror groups that I'm in on Facebook, just to kind of see what they think.
They sunk into it.
Yeah, like, and they're like, oh my God, this is great, and I love this, and I love this one. That really lit my fire, you know, all over again about it too. It's just been, the whole thing's just been exciting now. And then thinking about the fact that we can include things like this that sort of tell the whole story of what we went through in the entire process of like it being two different movies and how we sort of turned it from one thing into another, and the opportunities that we got because opportunities that we took from the adversity of having to deal with the first version.
Yeah.
I think like when I'm watching behind the scenes stuff, that's the stuff I love to see.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what I want to watch.
Yeah.
Like I want to watch Hearts of Darkness.
Yeah.
You know, and watch,
oh man, there were a couple.
You know, watch the stuff they're dealing with. I want to watch Lost Soul or what's the Werner Herzog one about
the boat movie?
Yeah,
the
Burden of Dreams.
Burden of Dreams.
Like that's the stuff. I'm like, those are the stories I want to hear. Not everything was great. We became a family. You know, everybody was so professional. What am I going to learn from that?
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, how's that going to teach me how to deal with when XYZ happens on set?
They're campaigning for their next gig,
right? Yeah. Well, so the fact that we can put out our version of that along with a movie we're proud of, I'm like, sweet.
Well, I mean, speaking of that too, like, speaking of that too, it's like speaking back to the whole thing of like what you were saying about how it's like people will help you push the boulder and then they go off and do their own thing and we're left alone.
Yeah.
I mean, that exact thing happened. Like, there were many times that Mel and I would get emails from people like, hey, what's going on with Imago? Like, don't understand why it's taking so long. And it's like, okay, well, do you have any money you want to put in? Like, are you working two extra jobs to try to make this shit work? No, you're not. Like, you're literally going off and working, you know, which, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with that, but my thing is, and this is one thing I've told a lot of people who aren't from the film world and don't understand why things take so long, is like, understand if it's an indie budget, like, that's probably coming from one, maybe two people.
Yeah.
And they're funding it themselves. Like, you can't be mad. Don't get frustrated. Don't get mad if the movie, they're like, hey, we're going to release it, and then it gets pushed, and then it gets pushed. Because the reality is, something could have happened. They could have, like Harvey, we lost a lot of shit. You know, we had to divert from that for a minute and just be like,
he's speaking of Hurricane Harvey.
Sorry.
Not Weinstein.
You know, shit like that happens. And as an independent filmmaker that doesn't have money coming from a big studio, it's like, what do you expect us to do? Like, I'm not going to go take a loan out of my house so I can, you know, make this movie happen. Like, I'll get it done. It just takes time.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things that, like, I remember Natalie and Aaron, we were all in the car together, and I think we were driving back from the house in Baytown that we shot all the kids' stuff in. We were just chatting, and they're like, just promise me one thing. And I was like, okay, because apparently this had been a thing for a lot of the movies they had worked on in the past. They're like, don't be the director that doesn't finish your project. And I'm like, that was never a thought in my head. Like, I'm gonna finish this movie no matter what. Like, it's gonna come out at some point, you know. Unfortunately, it took a long time.
Yeah, but we still did. Because, I mean, there was a point where we had a conversation where we were like, we have moved past everything. Chris has been working in the industry a lot. I've since made another movie.
Yeah.
We've kind of absorbed the money we've spent. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not like making a huge difference, the fact that I've spent that money on the movie. We could move past it and never
shelf it.
Yeah. Just shelving it, never put it out. You know, it might, at a certain point, it was like, maybe it's easier to do that.
Yeah.
Because do we have the money or time to?
Well, it'd definitely be easier, but you, yeah. But like you said, the question is, you know, is that something you could do? Something you could live with?
Right.
Something
yeah. I could no, stomach? No. Especially the fact that that I enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
I think it turned out pretty damn good. And I think everybody's performance is amazing. Lisa, Debbie, Natalie, like
yeah.
Omar, Sean. And I'm so proud of what it has become. You know, so it's like at that point, I was like, no, we got to see this through no matter how long it takes. But yeah, every time someone's like, we'll post something about it finally coming out. And someone will be like, finally, I want to reach through
and just strangle. Yeah,
they say from their cubicle at their
like I just wanna,
chill.
I honestly want to see the light go from your eyes when you say that, because you have no idea what this takes.
It's, yeah, because this whole time that it's taken until we got it finished, it eats at me. It would eat at us every day.
Yeah,
you know, maybe there'd be a few days where we didn't talk about it and we weren't thinking about
it. Yeah, it was.
We're
right
trying to figure out
red.
Some way to do something, or you know. So it's definitely been a going concern that I'm happy to put to bed.
Yeah. And I mean, if anything, like for me, one of the main reasons that I definitely wanted to finish it for myself, but that's not as important as respect for the actors and the crew that put their time into
important.
It. Very important. You know, the actors put their time, their effort, and they did an amazing job.
Yeah.
And they deserve to be represented for that, you know, and respected for that and shown for that.
They should have something they could show in their hands, something tangible. This is the movie I made. Now, whether they go on to have that cubicle or whether they go on to Hollywood and become very successful, them having that thing, I think, is a big
absolutely
big deal.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, you know, Lisa, Debbie, they have their Hollywood. You know, they're in that industry and they're doing it. Natalie, same way. I mean, she's working right now in Dallas on some like revolutionary thing. I don't know, but it's like a TV series. She's working on that right now. Omar's in and out of stuff. I know that. He still works. Sadie's acting. Mason, I think, is... I don't know what Mason's...
I think he's doing more theater stuff.
Yeah,
I think he's definitely still doing it.
Yeah. And then, you know, Brandon, he's also... He's kind of the cubicle job, but he still loves the art and still wants to do it. And then Danielle, rest in peace. She was still doing up to the point of you know,
that she passed away.
So just crazy, you know.
Well, that leads me into my next question. Speaking about Hollywood, with the state of Hollywood as it is now in 2021 with COVID, post COVID, assuming there is a Hollywood of some sort, there's something we call Hollywood that makes content, makes films, television. Is that something you guys want to pursue? Or is the indie market where you guys want to stay?
So this is an interesting one.
Yeah, I'll let you answer first.
Yeah. So I'm still going pretty strong and trying to work my way past the indie level. Don't get me wrong, I have a love for the indie level. There is something raw and just the creativity you have to come up with. You know what I mean? And the things you have to do to make a movie work on an indie level is what makes it beautiful. You know what I mean? What makes it an awesome thing to do.
You build relationships with people. We always liken it to war, right? But it's like we're going in the trenches.
Right, right.
Of course, none of us have ever actually... The only war we've seen is the set we were boom hopping on, right?
Exactly.
But it really, you really build those kind of relationships, like those deep relationships from going through all the craziness.
Yeah, I mean, because it is... In some aspects, it is like going to war. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not actually shooting people or anything, but like, there's struggles and it's tough, you know? I mean, most people.
And you see, it brings out the best and worst of people in a weird, like the way those intense situations do.
Totally.
Like,
and I mean,
it reveals who people really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you're working, you know, most people who work a 9-to-5, it's 8-hour day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We're doing 10, 12, 12, 14, 16. Hell, I've done an 18-hour day, you know?
Absolutely.
And then not leaving it at that.
Yeah.
You know, like you go home and you're still working, call sheets or whatever.
Yeah, you go home, do a call sheet, then you send it out, then you literally go to bed, you get 3 hours sleep, you get back up, and you go do it again, you know?
3 hours, rookie.
Yeah. Right. And trust me, I've had the no sleep nights. But you know, it's that kind of thing. I love that indie aspect. Now, knowing people that I know that are in the bigger studio projects, like Brittany, who actually did some VFX for us, who also is a producer on In the Blood. She's currently walking on, she's currently working on Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. So, and she's telling us stories like, oh my God, you don't understand, like, the crafty, the way food is, like, they don't have 12-hour days. 12-hour days.
You get a trailer.
Yeah, exactly. 12-hour days aren't 12-hour days. It's 10 hours, and then if you hit 12, it's double time. You know what I mean? So it's like hearing those stories, it makes you aspire to be like, well, I want to know how that feels, and I want to be in that scenario where it's like, it's, you know,
but at the same time, are you concerned about, you know, anytime you take a check, you give a little bit of authority away, or creativity, whatever, but the bigger the check, the more input whoever has. So if you get the studio check, are you concerned about, you know, I mean, you Marvel movies are done by committee.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Are you concerned with losing creativity or losing your influence over the creative?
I mean...
Or you just really want that 10-hour day?
I mean, it's not just it's that check, you know, like looking at, I mean...
For me, it's that crafty.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I know ADs that are working, you know, working in studio projects, and it's like those guys are making $50,000 and $60,000 for 4 months of work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're making a year's worth of work for me in the indie world in four to six months, you know? So it's like...
And for those who don't know, Chris has been pretty much making his living working as an AD for the last several years. Slowly working your way up.
Yeah.
To big, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I've got two big projects slated, but because of COVID, when I say big project, I mean, they're not studio, but, you know, we're talking getting into $5, $10 million budgets.
Okay.
That, you know, where my paycheck would be like that, you know, it'd be like $30,000 and stuff like that at the end. But that's the thing, is like what it took to get to that level, and what it's like, I want to be there and I want to start doing that. But also, no, all bullshit aside, I want to direct. Like, and so when you bring up the whole creativity thing and like worrying about that, yeah, that's a worry in my head. And like, but I think for right now, do I think I'm going to direct on that level? I mean, fingers crossed. Hey, if any of you studios watch In the Blood and you like it, give me a call. You know what I mean? But reality, I'm probably still going to be directing on at least the higher tier indie level. You know what I mean? Like, or what I would want to be doing. Yeah. Like, so I don't think I'm going to be in the studio level as a director.
Like now. A memento.
Right, right. Yeah, that kind of thing. Like, I don't think I'll be in like the, you know, I won't be directing the next Marvel movie next year. You know what I mean? So.
But you would if given the opportunity, right?
Oh, 100%. Like, I would never argue. Like, I'd be like, sure.
They already took all my characters. Yeah. They got Master Kung Fu coming out. So it's like, I'm done. There's no more
Marvel. Nothing for you?
Yeah. I'd probably get Power Pack. Yeah, can you direct Power Pack? Is I guess, you know.
Yeah, like, can we have the sentient horse?
Right,
because I'm in.
Yeah,
actually, what I would do would just take the script from the Kenny Rogers movie Six Pack, and just, you know what I mean,
scratch it out with Power,
you know, Power Pack.
Nice,
and we're just like, why are they driving race cars?
Right,
like, hey,
it's alien technology. Yeah. Shut up,
enjoy it. So yeah, I mean, when it comes to the creative side of like losing that creativity, I don't know if I'll experience that within the next year or two. Yes, that is a concern though. Like once, if I ever, well, not if, but when I get to that level, that definitely is a concern. Like, you know, I'm like, I don't, because I've heard so many horror stories.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is that movie we always talk about that they stripped it all from him, basically. Well, one of them is Justice League, to some extent, you know. I'm still interested to see the Snyder Cut and see what the reality is and how much they actually took from him and if it makes the movie any better. But there are other movies that I've heard of that it's like they completely ripped the power away from, like Alien 3, go down the list, you know, where they were just like, no, we're not going to let you finish this, even though if you would have, it probably would have been a million times better. You know what I mean? So... it's just things like that that, yeah, that's a huge concern, and I don't want the studio to take my creativity away. But at the same time, am I going to be against them giving me a note if they're cutting me a check? No. Like, yeah. I will absolutely be like, okay, yeah, no, I hear you. But don't expect me not to say something back. You know, mm-hmm. like, I'm not just going to sit there and take it.
Well, the goal is to be Tarantino, right?
Like, right. Or, I mean, really look at fucking Paranormal Activity whenever he was sitting down with Spielberg and literally was like, I'm not changing it. And, like, the whole room went dead silent, you know? And Spielberg was like, I like your style, kid. So, you know, like, I mean, it's things like that, you know, like.
I like the cut of your jib.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like more money?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to change the ending? Great. And it, you know, I mean, look at what that did for all three of them. Yeah. The director, Katie, and I can never remember the actor's name, but anyway.
Mika,
yeah. I mean, it made them millionaires. They don't have to do anything for the rest of their lives, you know.
And gave my movie a little bump.
There you go.
So, Mally, what about yourself? Hollywood or indie?
So, I would definitely do the Hollywood thing, but only, it would be have to be very specific situations. Otherwise, like if it's not these five projects or like a life-changing amount of money, not interested. Whereas before I'd be like, okay, well, I'm down for whatever. Because so many things have happened in the process, just like in the time since we've done the original shoot, I just have learned, I'm like, I'm not going to waste my time on something that I'm not super passionate about or that is going to change my life in a meaningful way,
right.
Which can make me passionate about it, you know, and I'm not being cynical. I'm just saying that like, okay, well, if I know this is going to put my kid through college or whatever, fuck yeah, I'll do Power Pack or whatever, you know what I mean? What actually, Marvel shit, I'll do whatever you want.
But not DC. No.
Depending. Ambush bug, I'm there. But
Michael Caine, I can't remember what the movie was, but he made a horrible movie for the money.
Oh, it was Jaws the Revenge.
Jaws Revenge.
Was it Jaws Revenge? Yeah. Yeah. They asked him, have you seen it? And he said, no, but I've seen The House
of Bugs. Jaws Revenge.
Yeah,
and it's... I
forget he was in that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Hoagie.
Hoagie. Yeah.
I must have mentally blocked that film from my.
It's pretty
even,
bad.
Even
like, that's the one with the wife is the lead.
It's Mario Van Peebles.
Yeah.
Was that the one where the shark followed her to the Caribbean?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
So she got in a plane, went to the Caribbean. The shark was there before she arrived.
That's right. Waiting for her.
Yeah.
It was literally just.
But I thought we saw the shark like back in like Cape Cod or something.
It did. It killed the first son.
Yeah.
The youngest son.
All this is going to get cut, I'm sure. But
yeah. but it's a good... Yeah. It killed Michael is the one that lives. It's in the Bahamas.
That's correct. It's the...
But it killed the first son that was the sheriff.
Yeah.
And it's implied that it's revenge for them killing the Jaws...
The three.
Yeah. So then it's like, okay, Ellen Brody's leaving. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
It puts on a shirt.
Yeah.
But yeah, it see a map follows
up. It beat a plane. It beat a jet. I think she took a jet, right?
Yeah. So.
Back on track.
But I'd do Jaws 5. Because that, I mean, I would think that would probably be a life-changing amount of money for something like that.
Yeah. You know? I mean.
To be sci-fi.
But even indie stuff, like if someone were to come to me and say, and this has a lot to do with things that I've just gone through too. If someone were to come to me and say, I'll fund a movie that you would like to do, I would have to think long and hard about saying yes at this point because there are struggles that I think at this level are not worth it. You know what I mean? A lot of them. Whereas just, it's different if someone's giving you a big check and then wants to make changes or have input or whatever. Or they're protecting an IP. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
You know? You can't have Mickey Mouse, like, shotgunning people to death or whatever. Like, I understand. But
or can you?
Yeah, write that down.
You're giving Hollywood gold right now. There's some exec that's just like...
Right. Copyright.
Can't be any worse than the last Star Wars.
Oh, man.
But, I've just gotten so more standoffish about movies in general, making movies in general, that it just has to be a very special situation, I think.
Now, do you plan to make more movies just on a lower... because I know me and you have talked a little bit about the using Cassavetes as a model.
Correct.
Is that something you're more interested in?
That is probably the next... At least one, probably couple, or kind of... Or unless something massive happens.
Yeah, which is possible.
Shh. we don't know when this is coming out. But if it's happened already, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I see it going down that road, yeah, because it's, number one, the stories that I have in the hopper are definitely much more personal, where I can't, I can definitely see people either not wanting to do them, not understanding them, or wanting to change them beyond recognition to where it wouldn't matter to me, you know?
Yeah.
So it definitely, yeah, definitely like Cassavetes type stuff, where it's like character-based, really, you know, dependent on the actors carrying something, maybe, you know, a little kind of wacky comedy type mm-hmm. stuff. Maybe some darkness, but not leaning into the full-on horror and blood stuff. Also for other reasons, you know, like it's not that I'm not into that stuff, but it's taken on me different meaning to me now over the last decade because of struggling with this, working on other movies that have PTSD'd me into not like wanting to do that kind of stuff anymore, and just kind of like just cauterizing that part of my brain for a little bit. So yeah. Whereas like the horror thing would seem to, it would be an easy end previously. Now I'm kind of like, I'm just not interested in doing that.
Yeah.
Which that already kind of cuts you off to a lot of funding,
yeah.
You know, cause people are wanting to make that cause it's always an easy return, which I don't know if necessarily is true.
Yeah.
But, and then action is the other thing. Well, I'm not that I don't like action movies, but you know, I'm not feeling it, right? So I don't, that's a, that cuts off the other major sort of indie funding. So it's kind of like that path is the one I feel like I almost have to take, where it's like a really small, really independent, really tight-knit group of people.
Well, Ed Burns has been doing that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect example. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Or like a Houston guy that I don't think gets brought up a whole lot, Eagle Pinnell, who did the whole shooting match and Last Night at the Alamo and things like that. He actually visited us at Access once. He was a friend of one of the guys I worked with. And unfortunately, like he had fallen on, as is the story, he had fallen on hard times. You know, it's hard for him to not just get something started, but pay his rent,
yeah.
You know. But that, the whole shooting match is, through a lot of stories, the movie that inspired Robert Redford to start Sundance, you know? So, I mean, this guy has made a massive,
yeah,
you know, mark on the industry, but nobody knows who he is.
Yeah.
But if you watch his movies, they are that kind of character study, kind of just real intimate type story. And that's, as I get older and as I get burned by all these other things, I feel myself more drawn to that stuff, you know? That's not to say I would not do the X-Men movie when you guys are ready to do it. I'm so there, and I've got my lineup already. But I'm just saying, like, if I'm just making my own thing,
yeah,
I can bring that to your X-Men film. But yeah, that's kind of how I feel now. And that's not the answer I would have given you a year ago, or, you know, definitely not 10 years ago.
But speaking of X-Men, isn't that the reason Logan worked, though?
It was more, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
More of a small,
right,
stripped down story.
Exactly. About, yeah, old man Logan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then unfortunately, you don't really get, it's kind of like comics where it's like you don't get to that point until you kind of fuck up the previous, you know, attempts,
yeah.
Where it's like someone like Liefeld can get on a book because it's not selling a lot, mm-hmm. and do what they want, and then it becomes this amazing thing. Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's kind of like, so I'll also do Alien 5 is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Predator, I'll take
and that. I love Alien Resurrection. I'm not saying that I love that movie, but you know, it's kind of like nobody knows what to do with it or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's one of the exceptions. It would be an Alien movie, like a Marvel, a superhero movie, and then like a Nightmare movie, obviously. Nightmare on Elm Street, come on.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, they took mine. I'm the biggest Karate Kid fan in the world.
Back. Keep going.
And so that's kind of been done, and done well.
Oh, Cobra Kai, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I actually haven't finished season 3 yet, but I've heard it's amazing. So that's probably this week's adventure. Yeah. Since, you know,
oh, I enjoyed it.
The lovely COVID times we're in.
Right.
I mean, that's another thing. Like right now, you know, the industry is at a standstill. I mean, realistically.
Yeah.
Even the big TV shows that all said, "Oh, look, we're coming back," they've all gone back to not doing it. You know, right before Thanksgiving, like just through the grapevine, you know, Shamar Moore tested positive. There's a lot of people that are testing positive.
Speaking of Soul Train,
yeah, right. Yeah. you know, there were
we were talking about Soul Train earlier.
Yeah, they. It's just interesting. Like right now, literally all I'm doing is sitting there. I'm writing a script. Like that's me and the DP that actually did Mystery Spot, which is Mel's next movie. I don't know if I could say the name.
Yeah.
Okay. We're sitting down and writing together a script that we want to hopefully get done this year. And I've got a couple investors that are actually interested. So, and you know, that's all from connections of working my ass off, you know, and me making these connections through that. And like people coming to me and being like, I hear you want to direct. Okay, well, let me know whenever you have a script ready because I want to see if I can get
some. I gotta hang around you guys more because it's like crowdfund. Let's crowdfund.
We got stories. Well, you've heard a lot of the stories.
I was going to say, yeah, as far as crowdfunding is concerned, we haven't, you know.
Whew, man, yeah.
Yeah, that's
bad. We tried when we were doing the initial round of figuring out the In the Blood VFX or Imago VFX.
Yes.
We tried to crowdfund and we actually applied for some grants and
nothing.
Nada.
Yeah.
A few people gave us money that are thanked in the credits.
Yeah, they are.
We remembered.
Yep.
But I mean, it wasn't. It paid for one shot, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. If that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, completely off topic. Favorite superhero?
Superman.
Superman? Mm-hmm. Why?
Why not?
I said that very challengingly.
Yeah, you really did.
There must be something in me. There must be something in me. I didn't realize.
Are you a? Yeah, you got some hate.
I just discovered something about myself.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
I mean, I have to say, I've got Kryptonian on my arm. So yeah, I'm a huge Superman fan.
Awesome. Awesome. Why? No.
I'm like, damn. what I think what I love about that character as a whole is it's the two personalities. Like the idea he has to keep this all away and like hidden, you know, and like try to be a human even though he's not. Like that whole thing just really is intriguing to me, you know.
But wouldn't you say he's the most human of all of us?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta clean my glasses on that.
Yeah.
Give me a second. It's like every teacher in because I went to community college also. I went to HCC, their film school program.
Okay. Yeah.
But like every teacher that's trying to be deep or something. we get it. He's the most human.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So Mel, favorite superhero?
Miracle Man. Because he's Superman without the...
Wow, you didn't get a... Why?
Because he... We've had this conversation already.
Not Mr. Miracle, but Miracle Man.
Miracle Man. Although Mr. Miracle's all right. Like some of his... the Tom King stuff I like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Miracle Man for sure. Like that series... Just Alan Moore in general. He's a huge influence on my writing. That series just blew me away when I found it as a kid. I love Superman. I love Batman. But I'm more of an X-Men Marvel guy. Specifically X-Men. I have been my whole life. But when I found, I remember my grandmother got me a box of comics. I was way too young to be reading this stuff. Box of comics, and the first three Miracle Man issues were in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see like an independent at that time, you know, comic. And you're like, what is this? You know, just there's something about it that has the stink of, you're like, oh, this isn't going to be good. And then I started reading it and I'm like, what is this? Yeah. You know? And I feel like that approach has been, it just hasn't been Miracle Man, but that approach has been taken in so many things that are like, let's do superheroes, but if they were real.
Yeah.
And that, I just really like the approach they take, the backstory, how they worked in the old stories into the narrative without throwing it all away. And then, of course, the big superhero fight in 15 where he fights Kid Miracle Man. It's like the best superhero fight ever. It is... The They Live fight, or actually, I like the Lethal Weapon fight better than They Live. They Live's a good fight, but the end of Lethal Weapon is magnificent.
Yeah, shot at the title.
But yeah. That it is that fight in comic form. You know what I mean? Like it is the fight I would go to be like, this is a fight. This is how you do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Miracle Man for sure.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. What about you?
Knocking
off the hook.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Marvel all the time, probably Hawkeye. I was always really into Hawkeye as a kid. Yeah. Always really, and he's the only Avenger character they really haven't spun. I guess there's planned to spin a TV show, but really focus that on his daughter. I guess they're trying to, follow some of what's happening in the comics and so forth. But I don't know. I think I just found it at a time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, just his first limited series, and then
Right.
It was just very interesting. And
was it the solo Avenger? Like the solo
Would do it? I think I remember.
I remember buying that off the
rack.
It was Hawkeye and then
Go into like, you know, the swordsman, him training
right.
And I don't know, it's just always like fast, like archery and this guy is just trained to be so good at one thing he could stand with these heroes.
Right.
You know, and be, you know, equal to them in ability. So Marvel, if you're looking, Hawkeye, I'm not doing none of that movie stuff. We'll spin it off on Netflix.
Well, it's Disney Plus now.
That's right. They've got and they're doing good stuff.
WandaVision, hands down.
Oh yeah, talk about
amazing. Really. I've only watched the first episode.
I've been like, we did this 10 years ago.
Yeah, we did this 10 years ago. Like the damn studio track. I'm like, no.
Or perfect timing.
Yeah.
I can't really say we ripped it off because the movie's been done.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of the way they approach that, the way they're doing that story, is exactly the kind of thinking like, you know, that I feel like we approach this with, you know.
Yeah.
So that brings me to my final question of this evening. And that is, what are the lessons you guys learned from making, I guess this is a twofold question, making Imago and making In the Blood? I do my own podcast where I ask this question a lot,
but
I've never had the same movie have two separate identities. Are there two different lessons to take away?
I mean, I feel like it's, I feel like it's two lessons. I'm just trying to think of like how to word it. Like, so lesson number one with Imago, for me at least, if you're going to do an indie film, I mean, as much as we planned it, as much as we did, like, just, yes, you think you're Superman. Yes, you think you can do everything. Just fucking hire people. Just pay them, pay somebody to build a set, because at the end of the day, if you're directing and you're trying to do all this other crap, not that I did, I'm not going to say I did.
I'm not going to say you didn't.
But in some aspects, there were days that, I mean, I was so exhausted that, not that I did a disservice to the actors, I'm still watching, I'm still paying attention, but at the same time, my brain is like thinking about every other little thing
Like you can't be fully committed. I felt the same way on Psychic Experiment. It's the same thing when you're juggling a lot of stuff.
And Lion Killer as well. It's like you want to focus with you need time to focus with the actors
right.
for performance. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about technical stuff and just it can pull you away.
Yeah.
So that's from Imago.
Yeah.
And In the Blood?
Just stick it out, because in the end it's going to be really good, you know. Have faith. If you've taken a project, you've gotten so far with it, just have faith in it and keep going. Don't stop just because you can't do it right then and there. You know what I mean? I think that's the two lessons that I've learned from doing this, and like learning from my mistakes in a lot of ways. You know, I think a lot of it is just don't give up. Don't feel like you're a failure, you know what I mean, because you haven't gotten a movie out, even though there are, and I'm not going to name anybody, but there are people out there that still to this day, you know, are like, oh, well, whatever happened to that movie? Why hasn't it come out yet? You know what I mean? Like,
basically, they say that with their script they've been working on for 15 years.
100%. Yeah. Basically treating you like you're a fuck up when really that, what have they done? You know what I mean? So don't give up just because people have either talked down to you or treated you like crap. Or, you know, you just run out of funds and you just are like, I can't do this right now. Yeah, you can't do it right now. But give it some time. Step away from it for a minute. Give it some time and get back to it.
What would you tell the version of yourself that was just about to go on set directing for the first time, before your first day, the night before your first day, you had a time machine? What would you tell that young Chris?
Don't.
It goes against everything you just
said. No.
Quit.
No.
If it gets tough, walk away.
No. I'm kidding. Breathe. That would be the thing I would tell my old self. Breathe. It's going to be fine. You'll get through it. So.
Yeah. And so, Mel, first, the lessons learned from In the Blood/Imago?
I would say that it's kind of an overarching one for both because it, one might solve the other. I would say that the number one thing would be listen to my gut. Like when I, what's so funny?
There's a story here. There has to be.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say. You probably know what I'm going to say. But it applies to a few things, though. Yeah. Like there were times during the making the movie where I was like, okay, maybe we should bring this other person on. They could maybe help us pull this off. And at the time, I was like, oh, well, we can't. I don't know where to find the money for this, or we need to allocate the money for something else. We can't afford it. But then in fixing that problem that we could have solved with that one person, we spent probably three times as much, you know? And then there were times where we had issues we had to deal with on set, and I wanted to bring in new people or replace people, or, you know, and I just decided not to. And looking back on it now, a lot of things would have been solved had I just made the call that day. On movies since then that weren't our movies, unfortunately, I've had to make those calls. Yeah. And sure enough, they solved the problems. Yeah. So I think if I just listened to my gut in the first place, well, I mean, we wouldn't have had In the Blood as it is now, because we wouldn't have been able to do the Sadie stuff. Yeah. But we might have had an easier go of it the first time around. And some more of our original vision might have been realized. Like there's
some really cool stuff that
we just didn't pull the trigger on, and I wish that I had, because, like I said, we ended up working harder to do something that I wouldn't say isn't as good, but it's something that we sort of had to develop in reverse. Like we're backing into something, whereas the original solution would have been what we wanted in the first place. Right. You know what I mean? So yeah, listen to my gut.
That's the main, for both movies, it's
for
the same.
For both movies, yeah, listen to my gut.
So what would you tell a young, now for you, we're going back to, like, when did you shoot your first film? Probably 15 years, you know?
That was 1999.
You're going to Fade to Black.
1999.
Yeah.
So, a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
A 20-year-old Mel House.
Yeah.
You have a time machine.
Uh-huh.
What do you tell him the night before?
So funny. Sounds like you have an answer for this.
Go ahead.
the night before your first day on set directing your first feature film.
I would just kind of creep up behind him in his ear and go, don't fuck it up. No, I do that to Chris all the time.
All the time on Dernamago.
Yeah, that would change your whole trajectory in life.
Yeah. There was a time we were shooting this window stuff with Imago.
I was just about to say that.
Like, yes. There was the actress in the window, and I moved them out, and I was like, don't fuck it up.
Like, it pulled me. Like, I was dying laughing. Everybody's like, what?
And I was out there fighting. I was like, what's this motherfucker going to look like?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I better not miss it. But what I would probably honestly say, man, you know what? The advice would be the same. I would tell myself to listen to my gut, because there's so many second guesses and things that I did back even on that movie that I think if I had stuck to my guns or what I felt was right in the moment, I think things might have gone a little bit easier for me, you know, and what I ended up with. And I also might tell myself to focus less on helping, pulling all my energy into helping other people make their vision, and focus a little bit earlier on mine.
Yeah. It's good to help people, but you can get lost in, especially if you're starting a career and you're making money.
Right. For sure.
You know,
for sure. And I feel like I wasted a lot of energy and years, almost my life. That's a different story. Listen to the podcast.
Yeah, listen to the podcast.
But on trying to help, you know, other people realize their vision. And some of those have still gone unrealized. Like, those movies are still unfinished. Yeah. So I would have much rather put that energy into my stuff.
And to be quite honest, like, speaking to that, that's a lesson I had to learn, I mean, this year. You know, like, I was on set, got COVID, ended up having to come home. And literally, I was like, it's not worth it. Like, it is not worth it. That's why I was saying, as far as direct, like, I want to direct. That's, I've known that forever. And for some reason, I got, like you said, I got caught up. I was making money. Paychecks were coming in. I was working on movies. I'm helping everybody else.
It's kind of my dream, because I'm working on movies.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I'm helping everyone else make their vision. whether it be completely stupid and never going to come out, or be really awesome and it does, I'm still helping them make theirs, but I'm not getting mine. You know what I mean? I'm not making mine. I'm not doing what I want to do, you know? I'm not fulfilling that need. And so being in quarantine for 10 days, that's, I just was like, nope, this year I'm going to change things. I'm going to direct. I'm going to do things that I want to do versus just go out and help everybody else make theirs, you know? So
I just thought of one more question.
Sure.
I guess cut this in anywhere you want. Funniest story that happened on set of In the Blood.
Funniest story,
or most interesting, something crazy story.
You just told a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
It's not really a funny story, but when I think we did this weird cannonball run the day that we were shooting Lisa down in Galveston.
Oh yeah.
Just because of her time, because she's SAG, you know, we had to try to get her out in 8 hours. But the location we were shooting for the exterior of the hospital to sell like a facility of some kind. Was a school that we had shot psychic experiment at, but it was in Galveston because we knew the people there. So, but then we had to come back up to Houston and shoot stuff up here too. So it was just this whole, like, I just imagine us, because we're driving in an RV because we had the RV for the actresses to go chill out in because our warehouse was so hot.
Yeah.
So I just imagine us trucking down the freeway and it's just like, you know, shimmying from side to side. We're just hauling ass trying to get to Galveston.
Yeah.
We get the shots knocked out there even though we shot right next to the auto shop and it was loud as hell. That was the day they decided to fix everything. And then as we're leaving, Lisa goes, I need to stop at McDonald's and get a cheeseburger. So we had to drive to Walmart, which is the nearest McDonald's, and get her a cheeseburger.
Yep.
Then start hauling ass back up to Houston to then shoot in the warehouse.
Yep.
And probably shoot at our house too.
Yeah, we did.
So it's just, we were running. It was like a three location day, one of which was in Galveston. Yeah. And just thinking of that makes me laugh because I'm like, that is crazy.
It was crazy.
You know, and we made it work. She got out with time to spare. Mm-hmm. But it was a brutal day.
So what we did is we went to Galveston, then we had to go to we had to shut her house.
That's right.
Yeah. That was a nightmare because we literally had to go up three flights of stairs. It was just crazy. Anyway.
Somehow, in the spirit of indie film, it all worked.
Yeah, made it work. Made it work.
So, funny but sucked story because of what happened. Nothing bad, but like, so we're shooting all at Mel's house, right? Because the house that we originally had fell through at the last minute, so it was like Mel was like, let's just shoot it at my house, whatever. Okay, fine, right? So their house for 2 weeks smelled like sweat, you know, basically just stunk, essentially.
Sweat, rancid
blood,
affects blood.
And slime.
Slime. We had fleas because we were leaving the door open.
Yeah.
So like a jiu-jitsu gym.
Pretty much. Yeah. The same bouquet.
Like... We're doing the final showdown. Everything's going down. Blood everywhere, right? Floor is, I'm sure you guys mopped for months and still have
blood. Yeah. When we moved out of that place and moved we thought we cleaned the walls.
Yeah.
We moved the couches. They're still like, it's pink and then white.
Yeah. There were buckets of blood spilled in that house, basically. And so,
the house you were renting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
from my old bandmate's uncle. So I mean it was fine.
Yeah.
And they knew what we were doing, but still I felt bad.
Yeah. And so 2 or 3 days of us shooting the finale, right? We're shooting blood, 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 blood. It's hot. It's like 110, 115. Shit is drying. The very end, Natalie's like, okay, I'm gonna go run really quick. She wanted to do this whole crazy freak out, which actually there is a piece of that in the movie that's really awesome. She kind of just like ran off, lost her mind, came back in and just did this crazy thing. The first time she tried, she came running in. She's in flip-flops. She comes running in. The blood is so dry that literally her feet go and she stuck to the ground. And she was like, okay, I'm going back outside. And she ran back out. And literally we had to like freshen up the blood so she didn't do that. But literally it was probably at least a quarter of an inch of blood just stuck to the ground. Yeah. It was pretty crazy. Yeah, that was one of the craziest things, was how much blood and just slime. And then it was like, now we have to do pickups after you guys had just cleaned. And of course, one of the pickups.
Were you guys making your own blood?
Marcus was.
Yeah, he had his own recipe. I think that time we had learned our lesson, and we got that instead of food coloring, it was that red powder dye.
Yeah, you just drop in and mix.
Yeah.
So, any final thoughts? Any final words for the people? Like you said, usually going through this, people with interest in film, maybe young filmmakers want to make a movie. What would you tell them? Final thoughts on or final words?
Go ahead, you first.
That's it. That's my final thought.
Don't make a movie.
Yeah. No, just real. I mean, just realize that it's real. It's real work, and you have to be committed to the work aspect of it. Like, you can't just be thinking about the glitz and the glamour and the shine. You know, it's going to take a lot of your soul to do it, to see it through. And I mean, so I always think about this quote from Chuck Russell. You mentioned Nightmare 3.
Yeah.
And in that behind the scenes that's on the DVDs, this quote always sticks with me. He says that his definition of director is the last man standing.
Yeah.
That's how he defines director. And I would totally, you are going to be one. In our case, it's two of us. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Firestar.
Yeah.
Not Firestar. Who's the other one? It's two guys.
Firestorm?
Yeah. Firestar's
girl. Yeah.
Anyway, you know what I mean.
Yes.
But the director is the last man standing. And that is, it's very true. Very true.
And to add on to that, you will get a lot of respect if you are the last man standing. And if you're the last man to make sure everybody's okay, just ask. Just thank everyone. You know, yes, don't do it every day. Don't walk up to everyone and say thank you, because it gets old and people just like, whatever, dude, go away. But make sure you do it. You know what I mean? Just give people respect. That's one of the biggest things I'll add to that.
And for the love of God, plan out what you're doing.
Oh my God.
Especially if it's, well, even if it's not a complicated thing, even if it's just two people talking, it's my dinner with Andre. Plan what you're going to do so you can communicate your plan to the crew, and you guys have at least a blueprint to work off of. You can change things on the fly a little bit, but, you know, a lot of our problems on these movies and on other movies we've worked on is because people just don't put in the pre-production time, the work beforehand, to get their head around what they actually have to do and what they have to do to make things work and what coverage they have to get. If you've got good people backing you up, you can kind of save yourself, you know, but it's really on you to lead the ship, to captain the ship in that regard. You need to have a plan and get everybody on your wavelength to try to execute that plan.
Awesome. Anything else, guys?
I hope they've all enjoyed watching this, but more so enjoyed watching the movie. Tell your friends. Make them watch it.
And go check out Derek's movie.
Yes, Lion please. Killer, available on Amazon.
Yep.
And Tubi.
Yep. And hopefully, who knows where this will be, but, you know, yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. And this is the end of our special features chat for the feature film, directorial debut of Mr. Chris Warren, and the fifth or sixth producer credit for Mr. Mel House. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I did like this. It made it real frivolous.
Yeah.
And that concludes our chat today about the feature film In the Blood. Thank you for watching.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.